Welcome and thank you for joining us for another episode of KPMG's Inside International Tax, a podcast devoted to recent developments, observations, and trends related to U.S. international tax. I'm one of your hosts, Gary Scanlon, a principal in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. I'm, as always, joined by my co-host, Kristen Gamboa, a managing director in the same group. Hey, Kristen.
Hey, Gary.
So on July 4th, President Trump signed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, commonly known as OB3, into law. The topic of OB3 is not new to this podcast. In episode 53, entitled Reconcilable Differences on the International Tax Provisions in the OB3, Ron Dabrowski joined us to survey the most significant changes OB3 made to several of the code's international tax provisions. In today's episode, we'll dig deeper into how the OB3 has impacted our beloved minimum taxes, BEAT and CAMTI. For our discussion, we're joined by friend of the podcast, Sivan Dunksar, a newly promoted managing director in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. Welcome back, Sivan, and congratulations on your recent promotion.
Thank you, Gary. So happy to be joining you again.
So before we dive into how the provisions in OB3 affect BEAT and CAMTI, let's level set on how these minimum taxes apply to U.S. multinationals. So BEAT is a minimum tax that applies to corporations that meet a gross receipts test. That is, they have an average annual gross receipts of at least $500 million over the past 3 years and have a base erosion percentage of 3% or 2% for certain groups that include financial institutions such as banks or registered security dealers. The base erosion percentage is determined by taking a taxpayer's base erosion payments, generally the deductible outbound payments that a taxpayer makes to foreign-related parties, over the taxpayer's total deductions with certain exclusions. If the corporation meets these two tests, it is an applicable taxpayer. Applicable taxpayers owe a BEAT liability if 10% of their modified taxable income, which is taxable income with base erosion tax benefits and a portion of NOLs used added back, exceeds their regular tax liability after reduction for most credits, including, importantly, foreign tax credits. Before OB3, the 10% rate was going to increase to 12.5%, and the ability to use the R&D credit and a portion of a few other business credits to offset the BEAT liability was scheduled to sunset for tax years starting after December 31st, 2025. As we've discussed on the podcast, OB3 maintained the beneficial treatment of R&D and other business credits, but increased the BEAT rate from 10% to 10.5% for tax years beginning in 2026. CAMTI, on the other hand, applies only to the largest, most profitable multinational corporations, those that have averaged over the three preceding years more than $1 billion in financial statement income, adjusted for items such as tax depreciation, federal income tax expense, and controlled group eliminations. This financial statement income, as adjusted, is known as AFSI. If subject to CAMTI, a taxpayer's CAMTI liability is the amount by which 15% of its AFSI, net of a CAMTI foreign tax credit, exceeds regular tax liability, net of a regular FTC plus BEAT. OB3 mostly maintained the status quo with respect to BEAT and CAMTI, but as we'll discuss in this episode of the podcast, the international tax landscape has changed around BEAT and CAMTI, making them much more top of mind to taxpayers and their advisors. And in particular, in this episode, we'll focus on how immediate expensing of domestic R&E, the reinstatement of 100% bonus depreciation, and changes to Section 163J and FITI could affect the BEAT and CAMTI liabilities of taxpayers. So with that background, let's start our discussion with R&E. In TCJA, Congress made some pretty big changes to the way R&E expenses are taken into account by taxpayers. Sivan, can you give our listeners a refresher on these changes?
Absolutely. So before the TCJA, all R&E expenses were generally deductible immediately, though taxpayers could elect to capitalize those expenses over 60 months under prior 174B or over 10 years under Section 59E. And there was also another option under RevProc. However, to pay for things like reducing the corporate and individual tax rates, starting in 2022, the TCJA required mandatory capitalization for all R&E, 5 years for domestic research and 15 years for foreign research. This was a big change and one that I don't think anyone on either side of the aisle would argue is good tax policy. So I think this is one of those changes that the Congress that enacted the TCJA hoped a future Congress would fix and just keep delaying past 2022. A similar dynamic existed with respect to the delayed effective date in 163J for the TCJA's change from EBITDA to EBIT, which I think we're going to talk about a little later.
So how does OB3 treat R&E expenses?
OB3 takes us back to pre-TCJA law and the policy of immediate expensing for tax years beginning in 2025, but this is only for domestic R&E. Foreign research remains amortizable on a 15-year schedule. And one thing to note is elective capitalization is still available for domestic R&E. Folks, we're hoping immediate expensing would go all the way back to 2022, and certain small taxpayers can actually amend and claim a refund for pre-2025 capitalized amounts. But there's also a broader salve that's generally available for all taxpayers. OB3 allows taxpayers an election to accelerate their prior year unamortized domestic R&E. You know, that's the R&E that was incurred between 2022 and 2024. And they can deduct all those prior year unamortized amounts, either all in 2025 or pro rata in 2025 and 2026. And taxpayers really need to make this decision on whether they're going to accelerate before they file their return for 2025.
Thanks. That's helpful background. So how could immediate expensing and the election to accelerate unamortized R&E have an impact on a taxpayer's potential BEAT liability?
Excellent question. So first, it can have an impact on whether the taxpayer is even subject to BEAT in the first place. As you already mentioned, Kristen, one of the requirements for a taxpayer to be an applicable taxpayer is that it has to have a base erosion percentage of at least 3% or 2% for certain taxpayers. Because of the 174 Cap A changes, including the transitional acceleration of prior year amortization amounts, because that only involves domestic R&E, it's unlikely to ever be paid to a foreign-related party, and thus generally is not included in the numerator of the base erosion percentage. But increasing those deductions increases the denominator of that percentage, and so it's potentially helping a taxpayer stay under the base erosion percentage threshold. Immediate expensing has this effect of increasing deductions as compared to capitalizing. But if you elect to accelerate the prior year unamortized amounts, you're in effect supercharging your denominator for 2025 or for 2025 and 2026. So that's the good part. But we're also seeing situations where that's just not enough and the taxpayer is still going to be over the base erosion percentage threshold, even with immediate expensing and accelerating prior amounts. And so in these cases, immediate expensing and accelerating can cause and really exacerbate a BEAT liability. The reason, as you already discussed earlier, is that BEAT compares 10% of MTI to a taxpayer's regular tax liability to determine whether the taxpayer owes BEAT. And immediate expensing of domestic R&E and any acceleration will have the effect of reducing regular tax. You know, at least that's the hope. But this is going to potentially create or increase a BEAT liability because of the rate difference. So you're losing 21 cents on the dollar in regular tax. You're only losing 10 cents on the dollar in MTI. And so that delta is going to cause a liability. And so for taxpayers that are in this position, the elective capitalization levers of 174 Cap AC or 59E could be helpful in increasing regular tax. And so again, gain back some of that cushion that you had before. Of course, there's also other methods planning that you could do to accelerate income or defer deductions. But again, when you're trying to make that decision of what you want to do about R&E, I think thinking about capitalizing or not capitalizing, accelerating or not accelerating is going to be really important. Counterintuitively, though, you could also potentially flush through so many deductions that you drive a current year loss for regular tax, and that current year loss becomes the starting point for MTI for B, such that maybe that loss can be big enough that it absorbs all the taxpayer's base erosion tax benefits. It might make sense to just keep digging. Of course, there are reasons why a taxpayer may not want to drive the U.S. into an NOL. NOLs are inefficient and can endanger certain other deductions, like your FDII and GILTI deductions. However, there could be large cash tax savings, and really it all depends on the math.
Thanks. So OB3 also reinstates the 100% additional first-year bonus depreciation deductions, so-called bonus depreciation, for property that was acquired and placed in service after January 19th, 2025. How does bonus depreciation affect BEAT?
So bonus is interesting. It's similar to immediate expensing of domestic R&E because bonus is going to increase your deductions, which increases the denominator of your base erosion percentage. So this can help taxpayers stay below base erosion percentage threshold, same as we discussed in the context of 174 Cap A. Or it can reduce regular tax in the BEAT liability calculation and cause a taxpayer to owe BEAT or owe more BEAT. However, there's something interesting to note that if a taxpayer is claiming 100% bonus depreciation on property that's acquired from a foreign related party, it'll have the effect of supercharging the numerator of the base erosion percentage, which is something that we absolutely don't want. And of course, it also could cause or increase a BEAT liability when those amounts are added to MTI. With that said, this is only something that matters for taxpayers that are purchasing a lot of fixed assets from foreign related parties.
So it sounds like OB3 could help or hurt taxpayers depending on their BEAT profile, but immediate R&E expensing can also impact a taxpayer's CAMT liability, correct?
Yeah, so similar to what we just discussed for BEAT, immediate expensing of domestic R&E and accelerating prior amounts could spring a CAMT liability. This is because regular taxable income would be reduced, but there would be no reduction to AFSI. And so, you know, this is a little counterintuitive as to immediate expensing because R&E is usually immediately expensed for book purposes as well. So there would be little to no book tax disconformity here, one would think. But for many taxpayers, capitalization of R&E was keeping regular tax higher than AFSI and covering for other permanent differences, for example, in stock-based compensation. So acceleration of prior amortization is a little different. That acceleration will generally throw AFSI and regular tax out of whack. This is because there's no adjustment to AFSI for those amounts, and so you'd be reducing regular tax, but AFSI would stay the same.
So how does bonus depreciation affect a taxpayer's CAMT?
Because taxpayers are generally permitted to deduct tax depreciation in computing their AFSI, there is no obvious mismatch between AFSI and regular tax. So this really does make it similar to what we talked about with immediate expensing for both CAMT and BEAT, in that when you're reducing your regular tax, you're potentially more exposed to a liability. And that's because if you think about it, you're losing 21 cents on the dollar on the regular tax side, but you're only losing 15 cents on the CAMT side, 10 cents for BEAT. And so here it's that rate difference that could be driving BEAT or CAMT liability.
Is there anything taxpayers can do to mitigate the impact of R&E expensing and bonus depreciation on their CAMT liability?
Yeah, taxpayers that are in scope for CAMT will need to do some careful modeling. They might prefer to keep amortizing those prior year amounts, and they might elect to capitalize rather than expense that domestic R&E. And also, they might consider electing out of the 100% bonus and maybe just claiming 40%. New Section 174 Cap AC provides an election that's similar to prior 174B and allows taxpayers to capitalize and amortize domestic R&E over a period of no less than 60 months. And this begins with the month in which the taxpayer first realizes a benefit from the research. But it's all or nothing, meaning you either capitalize zero or all of the R&E spend for the year. And in certain businesses like pharma, where a taxpayer may not see any profit from their research for many years, going through many layers of trials, cost recovery may be uncertain if you have to wait until you actually get a benefit. This means that taxpayers may prefer to elect to capitalize and amortize domestic R&E under Section 59E, which provides a 10-year recovery, and that starts from when you make the election. But this also allows taxpayers to right-size the dollar amount. It's not all or nothing. And as these provisions are so interconnected, I think modeling will play a big role in determining whether to make elections for certain domestic R&E and, again, electing out of bonus potentially.
It sounds like many taxpayers have been surprised by the impact of R&E expensing on their CAMT liability, in particular by reason of the election to expense unamortized R&E capitalized between 2022 and 2024. Is there anything that Treasury can do to help here?
Yes, Treasury has broad authority to make changes in CAMT, which contains more than 15 specific grants of authority. And similarly, Treasury could use the broad authority to implement transition guidance under OB3 to provide for AFSCME adjustment. This authority could be particularly useful in addressing the issue as it relates to immediate expensing of prior year unamortized domestic R&E. But what they will do really remains to be seen.
Simone, that was really helpful. And I want to move on to another important provision that was changed in the OB3. Specifically, the changes to 163J. In general, a taxpayer's deduction for interest expense is limited to 30% of its adjusted taxable income under 163J. The computation of ATI changed following TCJA and now again will change following the OB3. Can you talk about these changes, Simone?
Before 2022, ATI was computed without regard to deductions allowable for depreciation, amortization, or depletion. So it was based on EBITDA. The TCJA provided that for tax years beginning in 2022, depreciation, amortization, and depletion are not added back to ATI, which resulted in a more restrictive business interest expense limitation based on EBIT. Even before this change went into effect, as we talked about, there were campaigns to bring back the DA. And indeed, in the OB3, we did see that they brought back the DA beginning in 2025. So for 2025, we're back to where we started, and ATI is computed based on EBITDA. But also for tax years beginning in 2026, OB3 makes a couple changes that cut in the opposite direction and make the limitation more restrictive. Specifically, Subpart F and GILTI inclusions, Section 78 gross-up amounts, and inclusions under Section 956 are excluded from ATI. So that's going to reduce ATI for any taxpayers that were previously making the CFC group election under the 2020 proposed regulations, which is no longer available post-2025. And additionally, from 2026 onward, certain electively capitalized interest expense is subject to 163J and may have the effect of crowding out other deductible interest expense, potentially increasing regular tax or discouraging taxpayers from electing to capitalize interest expense.
Thanks, Savannah. So 2025 has been a particularly good year for me, but it's been a better year for interest expense under 163J. That is, it sounds like taxpayers may be able to deduct more interest expense in 2025 as compared to both 2024 and 2026. The reason being that the DA returns in 2025, which increases ATI, and the loss of the tearing up of excess CFC income and the capitalization provisions don't come online until 2026. Savannah, how does an increased interest expense deduction for 2025 in particular impact a taxpayer's BEAT liability?
That's a very good observation about interest expense. And that's right. When we're thinking about BEAT and 163J for 2025, some of our observations regarding 174 Cap A apply equally to interest expense. If a taxpayer is otherwise 163J limited, and if their interest expense is all domestic related party or unrelated party interest expense, increasing the amount that is deductible in the year could increase your denominator of your base erosion percentage. So that would be good. But if a taxpayer is over the base erosion percentage threshold, then deducting more interest expense and reducing regular tax could expose a taxpayer to a BEAT liability. Again, eating some of that cushion between 10% and 21%. However, perhaps more importantly for BEAT, if the interest is instead paid to a foreign-related party, it is generally going to be a base erosion tax benefit when it's deducted. That means that deducting more of that kind of interest expense would increase the numerator of your base erosion percentage, causing a more prominent increase as compared to decreasing the denominator. And also in the MTI computation, that additional interest would be added back at a 10% rate, 10.5% in 2026. This could have the direct result of springing or increasing an existing BEAT liability. And the same issue comes up if you're freeing up the use of carry forwards and those carry forwards are foreign related party interest expense. Again, modeling will be important here, particularly considering the changes coming in 2026 for capitalized interest expense. There's a lot of uncertainty around how exactly the inclusion of capitalized amounts in 163J will impact BEAT, particularly when there's a mix of related and unrelated party interest that's being capitalized.
So, Sivan, the increase in interest expense deduction due to changes from OB3 could lead to an increased BEAT liability, if not otherwise managed. So is the result the same under a CAMTI?
Yes, generally anything that reduces regular tax but does not change AFSCME will make a taxpayer that is subject to CAMTI more susceptible to having a liability. But here the issue is sort of similarly counterintuitive, like with 174 Cap A, because there is no 163J limitation for AFSCME. This means that book and AFSCME will generally expense all the interest expense paid in the year. In itself, this cannot drive a CAMTI liability. But as noted for 174 mandatory capitalization, if having less interest expense deducted for tax compared to book was covering for other book to tax differences, then having more interest expense be deductible for tax could increase or create a CAMTI liability. Additionally, to the extent a bigger Section 163J limitation means that a taxpayer can utilize carry forwards, that would clearly contribute to a CAMTI liability because those expenses would not be an AFSCME. And as I said, book generally will expense the interest, but only the interest that's paid in the year. It's not going to give you an expense for prior year amounts.
So, Sivan, CAMTI is meant to just be a cash tax cost, not a permanent cost. That is, a CAMTI liability creates a CAMTI credit that can be indefinitely carried forward to offset a future regular tax liability. But why sometimes can a CAMTI liability become a permanent cost, Sivan?
So an indefinite credit is a good thing. But in practice, the ability of a taxpayer to utilize its CAMTI credits in any carry forward year can be limited. The CAMTI credit can only be applied after general business credits reduce regular tax, and it can't reduce regular tax below the tentative minimum tax for the year. And so this means that taxpayers with significant general business credits or who are expected to be perpetual CAMTI payors because, you know, their tentative minimum tax is always going to be higher than their regular tax, they may find it very difficult or impossible to use the CAMTI credit. And again, here the answer is to model, and then model some more.
So, Sivan, there is one other provision that our listeners might be interested in hearing about, and that's FDII. Before we talk about FDII in the context of BEAT and CAMTI, how did the OB3 change FDII?
This is where we get out our calculator. FDII is currently taxed at a rate of 13 1/8 by means of 37.5% deduction under Section 250. For tax years beginning after December 31st, 2025, the FDII deduction was set to decrease to 21.875%, making FDII taxed at a rate of 16.406%. OB3 made permanent a 33 1/3% deduction, resulting in an approximate 14% rate. In addition, OB3 eliminated the exemption for the normal return on tangible assets, so no more QBI for FDII. And that means that all foreign-derived income from sales or services can qualify for the deduction, which is now called just the FDII deduction. And another important change is that gross DEI and gross FDII going forward, starting in 2026, are not reduced by interest expense, and they're also not reduced by R&E expenditures. And that's a good one. But cutting in the other direction, the OB3 excludes income or gain from the sale or disposition of IP or other property that's of a type that's subject to depreciation, amortization, or depletion in the hands of the seller. So this includes deemed royalties from a 367D transaction. And, you know, these rules are retroactive. Most are not under OB3, but this does go back to transactions that occurred after June 16, 2025.
Thanks, Savannah. I think Ron observed in our last podcast on the OB3 that this was a provision meant to allow taxpayers to sell the fruit of the tree, but not the tree itself, and is pretty consistent with the original intent of FDII. So, Savannah, how do these changes to FDII affect BEAT and CAMTI?
So for taxpayers benefiting from the FDII changes, presumably and hopefully their regular tax will be reduced. And as we discussed throughout this podcast, anything that reduces regular tax can be problematic for BEAT and CAMTI. For BEAT purposes, the 250 deduction is one of those deductions that is specifically excluded from the denominator of the base erosion percentage. So there's not going to be any effect to the denominator, positive or negative. I'll also note it's not going to have any effect on the numerator because these are inbound payments. However, when regular tax is reduced, as we said, a taxpayer is more exposed on the MTI side of the BEAT liability computation. And the same goes for CAMTI. We're reducing regular tax, but not changing AFSI because we don't have an adjustment for FDII. So that makes taxpayers more susceptible to having a CAMTI liability.
While we're on the subject of FDII, it should be noted that immediate expensing of R&E in 2025 and the election to accelerate unamortized R&E in 2025 or 2025 and 2026, which we talked at length about earlier, could also have a negative and permanent impact on the FDII deduction for 2025. That's because non-allocation of R&E to FDII is only effective starting in 2026. So in 2025, all those expenses could reduce the FDII benefit. Going forward, R&E won't reduce FDII, though those expenses could still curtail the deduction through the taxable income limitation of 250A2. In any case, this could be another reason why a taxpayer might not want to accelerate unamortized R&E into 2025. Any final thoughts, Savan?
Yeah, Gary. So back in September, the IRS issued these CAMTI notices. We had a couple other notices in the beginning of the year. And I think one of the most interesting things that came out of them is that the government has made it clear that there's not going to be any retroactive application of the 2024 proposed CAMTI regulations, and that future regulations, when finalized, are only going to apply to tax years that begin after the final regulations are issued. So I think that's an important point for taxpayers to keep in mind that have been a little nervous maybe about any potential retroactivity to 2024. The other thing, too, is with respect to the 2024 regulations, the notice makes clear that you can kind of pick and choose your own adventure to some extent, and you don't have to rely on all of the proposed regs, and you don't have to bind your whole test group. There are some consistency requirements that taxpayers need to keep in mind going forward, but in many respects, it may be worth revisiting those regs to see whether there's anything there that's helpful. And the reason I say this, too, is that we don't think regs are coming anytime soon. There may be more notice guidance. That part is a little unclear. But we don't think that regs are going to be finalized soon because the priority guidance plan that the IRS released for 2025 and 2026 does not have CAMTI proposed regulations on there. So I think it's definitely worth for taxpayers to really think about what they want to do about CAMT going forward and really model not only all the substantive rules that came out in the notices, but also potentially the proposed regs.
Thank you, Sivan, for your insights into how the OB3 affects the minimum taxes. And a special thank you to Jackie Kunkel and Casey Caldwell for their help behind the scenes with this episode. It sounds like taxpayers should sharpen their pencils and begin to model how all of these provisions affect their future BEAT and CAMT liabilities. In the words of a very wise KPMG partner, the OB3 giveth, but BEAT and CAMT taketh away. Well, sometimes. As always, please stay tuned for future episodes of KPMG's Inside International Tax to stay up to speed on the latest developments in U.S. international tax. Until our next episode, take care.